I am Conor MacLeod of the Clan MacLeod, and I am immortal.
Looking for a dead guy named Nash.
You talk funny, Nash. Where are you from?
Lots of different places.
I am Juan Sanchez Villalobos Ramirez, chief metallurgist to King Charles V of Spain.
Everybody's got their problems.
You're alive. Why didn't you die?
Hey, it's a kind of magic.
Hi, I'm Candy.
Of course you are.
Hello and welcome to Another Time MacLeod, the only podcast, to our knowledge, dedicated to breaking down the 1986 cult classic Highlander, scene by scene. I am Rob Wallace. As always, I am joined by McKinsman, Mr. Rob Daniel.
And as always, it's a pleasure to be here.
And we are joined by, for this episode and hopefully for next, the wonderful Elaine and Mark.
Hello! Ferguson.
Hello!
Very, very happy to be back.
Well, thank you so much. It's an absolute delight, as always. And today, well, we're going to be talking about the scene between 1 hour, 13 minutes and 39 seconds, 1:13:39, and 1 hour, 14 minutes and 52 seconds, 1:14:52, or the reunion, the meeting between Conor MacLeod, Christopher Lambert, and Castagir, Hugh Quashie, in Central Park.
Just before we get into it, Rob, did you introduce yourself on this episode? Or are you being...
I almost never do.
I think that you are being a man of mystery for this episode.
Hello, I am Rob Wallace. I'll go back and splice that in through the wonder that is my limited editing skills.
But now we'll have to pay off Mark and Elaine so they never, ever reveal the secret.
Oh, you should hear what goes on behind the scenes in ours. There are arguments. There are pauses that last minutes. There are moments where I just go, I just can't think of anything.
And quite often, you cannot say that.
We can't say that.
Oh, wow. You would never guess that.
So today, we are talking about the wonderful, long-awaited meeting between Conor and Castagir on Bow Bridge in Central Park, which, to give nothing away, I believe that... Mark and Elaine, you have both been to.
It was the when we found out that you were doing this podcast, I was so excited. And the first thing I did, right, other than like run around and tell Mark, I think I like ran upstairs and go, have you seen? Was go to our Google Photos and look at pictures of us on Bow Bridge, which we have many of. We went to New York. I'm going to look at Mark for the date because I'm going to go, when did we go to New York? When was it?
September 2015.
There we go.
Because we flew back on September the 11th, which...
Yes.
It took us a long time to get through security that day
for obvious reasons. It certainly did.
Yeah. We wondered what the flights were a lot cheaper that day, and we wondered why, and then suddenly we realised as soon as booking it. So,
Wow, so flights were actually cheaper that day. Okay, that's interesting to know.
I assume that's the reason why, but yeah, for some reason they were significantly cheaper to fly back that day rather than the Thursday before.
I'm sure that's the reason.
So, yeah.
It was our first time in New York, wasn't it? For both of us.
It was our first time leaving Europe together. Mm. Are we going to tell the full story? Are we going to bore people with it?
I don't know.
Yes. Sorry. Not to say yes, you're going to bore people, but yes, you're going to tell the full story.
I'm intrigued now because I don't know what the full story is. I'm slightly worried.
So shortly before going, one of our best friends, committed the biggest act of treason that could ever happen. And he took his girlfriend, who he'd been together with for a similar amount of time to us, and proposed to her in Paris. So Elaine had never been shy of dropping hints about how she would quite like to get married quite soon. And I had to have a very serious conversation with her to say, if we're ever going to get engaged, it's not going to happen in a foreign country because I am not trying to take a ring through security at an airport. I get enough unease going through thinking, have I just packed some drugs or knives or guns in my luggage without me realising it? Without having to worry about a ring coming through. But so, yeah, we planned out our time in New York, and as we do when we go away, we spent a lot of time looking at places we could go to from films, and I'd not really seen Highlander that much, but Elaine kept on going on about Bow Bridge in Central Park where this scene happened. And we got to Bow Bridge and Elaine gave me a nice expectant look and I thought this would be a brilliant time to have an engagement ring with me, and I didn't.
No, you didn't.
And then she spent the rest of the time putting pictures on Facebook of her hand over my chest in that way to say, nothing on here, girls at home.
It does look really obvious now. Now that I'm looking, you know, and all the tall buildings just standing there with the hand placed so that everyone, you know, could see at home that there was no engagement at that point in time. But it was beautiful. Like Bow Bridge, I was really... I think obviously you see it in the film and it's one of the, I think it is the longest bridge in Central Park, and it stretches over this this piece of water, and it does look absolutely beautiful. And then when you're there and you're right in the centre of Central Park and you're standing on it and you can feel like the wood beneath your feet, it is beautiful. And we were there and it was very, very hot when we were there, so it was a beautiful summer's day. And the trees are around you, and in the distance you can see the Ghostbusters building. Yeah, there's all of that film history.
Oh God, I thought I could. I genuinely was going to make a joke that yeah, you can see the Ghostbusters building from here.
You can. But,
It's not in shot. I did some research on this along Central Park West Road. It's actually one building to the left hand side of the one that you can see on the corner of the screen as they cut to it.
No, because is it the Dakota building you can see in the background during one of the shots?
On the wider shot, about halfway through the scene on the right hand side, yeah, you can see the Dakota building, which.
Yeah.
Do you want to fill in why that's famous?
That's the John Lennon building.
It is, yes. And there is a John Lennon tribute just in Central Park, just outside that, where people often lay roses and like the lyrics
Yellow
to Imagine
roses.
And stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So so what was it like walking on Highlander Bridge?
Well, it's woody. it's not like a stone sort of, you know, like concrete-y. It really does feel aged. It's interesting to step on it and to sort of visualise where Connor and Castagir were. It's slightly lower, I felt. I don't know if you felt like this, like watching the film again. The film positions it as being really up high and really sort of tall and with all this water underneath and things in the background. But the shot really seems to emphasise how big it is, and it's this very central point. Whereas when you get there and you kind of see the little chairs around it and there's a lot of foliage, and it doesn't quite look as imposing as the film. So it's really beautifully shot, and it was lower than I anticipated.
That's interesting, because the shots of the two of them, the wide shots of the two of them on the bridge, were actually shot from the water, so would have been shot just above water level. So that's interesting, yeah, that it added that kind of illusion to how it looks.
My favourite thing of that shot is the guy in a rowing boat in the background who's clearly clearly waiting for someone to say action and just cruising along, and then halfway through the shot starts rowing.
Yes!
Yes. We were hoping, because I'm actually at Rob's right now, I'm recording it in his spare room because I'm down in London. We were hoping that Russell Mulcahy on the audio commentary would just mention that guy, but he doesn't. He doesn't mention anything about that guy. It's like, well, because I thought it might be like a director cameo or something, but it wasn't.
It looks like it should be someone who we should know.
Yeah, but he made no comments. I think it was just an extra, just, yeah, told. Yeah, go on.
But it's the estuary guy.
It is.
Yeah, he got better.
And if Elaine's theory is anything to be believed, he's rowing away from the police. But that is a deep cut to the movie Robcast episode we did with Mark and Elaine on Jaws. You'll have to go and listen to that to get more of that particular theory.
But yes, in this scene, we've got Connor meeting up with old friend Castagir, who he hasn't seen for a century. And it is lovely because they meet each other and there seems to be a moment of tension where they're kind of both reaching into their... It's got Connor reaching into his trench coat and Castigare reaching into, it seems to be, and again, apologies, I don't know enough about the culture, some sort of traditional African dress. And Connor brings his hand out and laughs, and his hand is empty. Castigare brings his hand out and he's holding a hip flask.
Hey, Castigare.
MacLeod, it's good to see you again. Seems like 100 years.
It's been 100 years.
How you been?
A hip flask containing the boom boom.
Put hers on your chest.
Big man, like, you shouldn't be afraid of a little boom boom. It's one of my absolute favourite lines.
This puts hairs on your chest.
What is it?
Boom boom. Big strong man like you shouldn't be afraid of a little boom boom.
Yeah. And also, it's great because Connor's, what is it? Christopher Lambert's, what is it? Is probably the most neutral accent he achieves in the film. In terms of, like, you don't sound French. You don't sound like, you just, your accent here, I'm not sure what it is, but it's really neutral. I'm quite impressed.
What is it?
Don't you just love that you're only with Hugh Quashie for a small moment? It's just this moment on the bridge, which I'm disappointed in, I have to say. I want to see more of Castigare. But you know everything you need to know about Castigare from that moment on the bridge. That is it. You know, the boom boom, the let's have a party, you know, I haven't seen you for 100 years. Just everything within that performance tells you what you need to know about that relationship that they've had over the years. And that Castigare has a twinkle in his eye that I love. I really love to understand more about his past and his history, and to know about the adventures that he went on as well. I think it would be a brilliant spin-off.
Yeah, Hugh Quashie is, you know, he's a really interesting actor. I think he was BAFTA nominated this year for Stephen, for the miniseries about Stephen Lawrence. And, you know, he was in Holby City. He did Star Wars Episode One, the second actor in Highlander the other actor in Highlander to be involved in Episode One, other than Celia Imrie. He did The Church, about which I'm sure Rob will talk in a bit. He was in Doctor Who in the episodes Daleks in Manhattan.
We watched that last night, didn't we?
We did. We watched it last night, Rob. In prep.
Yeah, he plays a leader.
Solomon.
Yeah, the leader of the guys who live in Hoover Town.
Is it Hooverville?
Hooverville, sorry, yes.
Yeah, Hooverville, which was kind of the term for, weirdly enough, I talked to Rob earlier in the week about Herbert Hoover and about his disastrous approach to the Great Depression, and the fact that all the kind of shanty towns that sprung up in the major parks in New York, and the fact that this was probably, I can't remember off the top of my head, but I'm guessing the Hooverville that he's in may well be in Central Park.
Yes, I think it is.
It seems to be. Yeah,
yeah. It does seem to be.
Although probably not actually in Central Park. It's a park with the similar buildings projected into the background.
Yeah, and obviously, I mean, that was that probably double bill, Daleks in Manhattan, Evolution of the Daleks, is probably best known for the fact that Andrew Garfield's in it.
We were really shocked.
We were surprised.
But you forgot Andrew Garfield in it. And turns into the Pig Man.
Yes.
Yeah.
He looks so young. He looks so young in it. We're like, look at him. We're like watching Hugh the whole way through. Like, oh, there's Hugh. He's doing his thing, and he's doing his activism. And then we're like, who's that? Oh, it's Andrew Garfield.
I mean, I think it was largely shot in Cardiff, which, if you've been, I guess, following the recent news about Doctor Who, I'm very excited. I'll do my best not to turn this Highlander podcast into a Doctor Who podcast, but it's currently the Wednesday, the 18th of May, and I'm very excited because Russell T. Davies is coming back, and they've cast the new Doctor, the 14th Doctor, Shuti Gatwa. They've cast his companion, David Tennant's coming back. Lots of theories around how he's coming back. He's coming back with Catherine Tate, and yeah, all of a sudden I'm 15 years old again.
Have you seen any of Sex Education yet?
I watched the first episode. I enjoyed it. I didn't enjoy it enough to make me go, ooh, I desperately need to keep watching this. I saw Jodie Whittaker a while ago now in a film called Adult Life Skills back in 2016. And I remember saying in my review of that film, she'd make a good doctor.
Oh.
And wow. Yeah, which I think is probably the best call I've made or will ever make.
You should totally be playing that, at, like, just reading that out every episode, like the Will Smith shout in for the Oscar.
Yeah. But you guys really like sex education, don't you?
Yeah, we're absolutely huge fans.
I think it builds, so it's worth sticking, you know, maybe the first episode pilot and just seeing how the characters build. And you'll find that characters that might seem really peripheral to begin with, they will grow and grow. And there are some really quite heartbreaking moments and some real moments of pathos, and in a show that ostensibly is about younger people exploring sexuality, which, you know, you can have a bit of slap your thigh humour with, there's some really strong moments in there as well. So it can catch you unawares sometimes, I think.
Yeah, I need to give it a look, because it always sounds amazing when you talk about it. But so to drag it back to Highlander. So am I right in thinking, Elaine, this is your favourite scene of the film?
Yeah. I think the bridge is such an iconic place for me now. So there was the moment where Mark didn't propose. And just to add to the story, you know, Mark's just said there that, you know, oh, his mate went off and they got engaged in Paris, and he was saying, oh, I'll never take a ring, you know, through security. Who would do a thing like that? Just to point out that we got engaged in Las Vegas, where Mark did take a ring on a very, very long flight. All the way there. He kept checking his bag. I remember it really well. He just kept leaning down and like looking in his bag, and still I didn't know it was going to happen, because he had led me this long-winded tale to say that, you know, we would never be getting engaged abroad, and in fact we absolutely did. So we had that moment on the bridge, which was lovely because I got to share that with Mark. But then I also went back. I was with work. And that was in 2016, I think. I'd been to Toronto with work, and then we went to New York, and I know it sounds all very glamorous, but it was hardcore. It was really, really lots and lots of talking, lots of presenting. I work in higher education, so we were doing lots of conferences, and it was early mornings and late nights. But I had one day where I could go and do things. I went to a George Lucas exhibition and took some really weird selfies of me next to Darth Vader.
Oh, wow.
Just like doing a big scary face and sort of taking photographs of Yoda puppets and things like that. That was amazing. And then I took myself off to Central Park, obviously, and went on the bridge myself and actually ran across. I was running around Central Park as well, and I ran across the bridge. I didn't cycle as per the film, but yeah, I ran across the bridge there, and I stood and I took lots and lots of photographs of it. So it's really become a really special place for me, actually.
And I think the one thing our listeners probably want to know is, how long after that first trip to New York was Las Vegas?
Too long.
It was 18 months.
Okay, so...
I mean, it literally was. You're saying, no, it wasn't. It was. It was April 2017.
What, from the last trip to New York? So the one I was on my own?
No. From the trip where I let you down and didn't propose.
Oh, really?
It was 18 months, yeah.
God, it doesn't feel like that. It felt like years.
See, after that crushing disappointment every year, just felt like it was on the edge of a black hole, and it was just taking much longer. And But don't feel bad about that, Mark. That's fine.
Yes. Yeah.
yeah, Mark. Don't worry, I'm over it, sort of.
I kept on saying to Elaine, when she stopped asking me to propose, I will propose.
And indeed it happens, because I didn't know.
She didn't, in the end, but I just got bored of waiting for her to stop, so I thought there's a nice way to do it.
But it is, it's a lovely, lovely spot, and I think because it has that connection, and actually it's in loads of films. I mean, it's in all sorts of TV shows as well, so you could have a connection to it in lots of different ways. But I think it's such a stunning shot, you know, when you start that scene and there is the bridge and there they are walking towards each other, and it looks like it's going to be a duel, you know, they're coming towards them from either side. And then you have those really interesting things. I've just mentioned like the cycling, and I've watched it again today. I've watched it a few times in the last couple of days, and it's just... it just comes out of nowhere. This cyclist like zooming across the bridge, and it's quite jarring. I'm not quite sure what he was. Does Russell McKay say anything on the commentary about the cyclists and why he put that in?
Absolutely nothing.
He is annoyingly silent for most of that first scene on the bridge, and then he begins to talk, but he's prepping to talk about the duel scene, the next scene. But I really like that bit with the cyclist, because it's like just this, you're right, it just comes out of nowhere, but it's just this small beat of other life happening in the city, and these cyclists just riding past these immortals, just blithely unaware of what's happening around them. And it's like, again, it's just the attention paid to the small details of this film. Like, that shot doesn't need to be in there. Presumably they had to get the cyclists, and I'm not sure if they're extras or if they were just in a cycling club and just did it for free, but it needed organizing, and you could lose it and the scene would still play. But to have it in there just adds like another little beat to it that you just think of when you think of the scene.
It seems like a really intricate way to get some B-roll, like just to edit together two shots. Normally you just take a picture of the water or something like that, but yeah, there is a lot of care put into it. I totally agree.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I really like about this scene is that, because this comes off the disastrous date with Brenda, and then the emotional gut punch that is the final scenes with Heather. And it's really, so we've had some real emotional crescendos, and then it just cuts to this serene shot of the bridge and the two small figures, and the film seems to literally be just allowing you to breathe and to have a quick breather, and it goes into this comedy moment, and it seems very well placed in terms of, we know we can't keep adding any emotion for a few minutes. Here's a nice little respite from that.
I think it's just nice to think that Connor's got like a friend who's not Rachel as well. Like, he knows other people and is warm to other people.
But again, he hasn't seen this person for a century.
But that's a short amount of time, you know, like when you're as old as he is.
It's still not that short amount of time. And let's say, like, you know, let's say the average life expectancy is 80 years, which it isn't. And let's say he hasn't seen him for a century. And that's the better part. Let's say that's a quarter of his life. He hasn't seen him for, relatively speaking, 20 years. There's still a lot of time not to see somebody you consider a friend.
Yeah, they wouldn't even have Facebook to just keep in touch with or anything like that, would they?
No, like, he literally hasn't seen him. And, like, it's never established how exactly they got in touch.
Wait, is it this idea, isn't it, of at some point in time, because Connery says this earlier on, some point in time we'll all feel this pull towards a distant place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When only a few of us are left, we will feel an irresistible pull towards a faraway land to fight for the prize.
But the pull wasn't specifically towards that bridge for just the two of them.
I think you're looking for that realism that the film plays fast and loose with. I think that's the case, that it is like, there's a pull. You probably have a sense when there's like another immortal around and you are drawn to that particular area. Which doesn't always like you bear out, of course, but it's the way that at the beginning of the film, he's at the wrestling, even though he would never go to a wrestling match. He's there because he knows that Fazil was going to be there.
I think he's a man of taste.
Well, I would. I mean, the savage ballet that is professional wrestling, yeah, absolutely. But but... yeah, I like the idea that it's like they just seem to be drawn, particularly if there's a kinship between them, they would just be drawn together.
I'm confused about how excited Castagir is about the reckoning.
What, the reckoning?
Reckoning? Yeah, that's something very different, isn't it? Because he's like pounding his fist like he's excited about going to a party or something like that. It's, yeah.
Oh, yeah, the wonderful, like, so the gathering is here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Time's almost caught us, my friend.
Time's almost caught us, my friend.
And then when Connor goes, do you think we should go on? Which is, you know, him being ironic that I know that kind of, Rob, you have a point around this.
Yeah, but just before we get to that, I think that's a really good point. But I kind of read that as he's kind of like, it's like when a soldier knows he's going to go into a decisive battle at the end of a war or something, and there's a certain amount of excitement and anticipation that this could all be over sometime soon. He seems to be banging it with a certain amount of, like, yeah, let's do this. Banging the handle of the bridge, sorry. But
the odds aren't great for him, though, is it? It's 1 in 3.
Yeah, and the fact that he's introduced pretty late into the movie is like, I just don't think you're going to be here come the end of this. But I think it's needed, to your point, Mark, because it's like, well, yeah, you need to show that McLeod had some other friends. And the film is very kind of geometric in that way. There are two enemies that we see, Fazil and the Kurgan, and there are two friends, Ramirez and Castagir. But from that, you can just imagine a much bigger world that he's been through.
Absolutely. I can see why it's your favourite scene, Elaine. It's, yeah.
Yeah, it's not just the cinematography, it's not just about the bridge, although that's the thing that I come back to. It's about this relationship between these two men that you get a snapshot of, and then your imagination takes you to what they might have got up to in, you know, previous years, you know, 100 years ago plus. And also that they seem to be two friends. Like, you get this with mates, don't you, where one's a little bit more the party animal than the other one, and leads the other one astray. Sometimes even, and the other one really wants to be led astray as well, you know. The other one gets to feel a sense of relief because they're like, oh yeah, I can just let my hair down, and it's not something I naturally do. I really feel that about Connor. I feel he's very tightly wound, you know, and he needs someone like Castagir to come along and say, come on, let's party. Yeah, we're gonna be fighting, yeah, we might need to fight each other, but for this moment, on this bridge, let's put our arms around each other and let's go and, you know, have some boom boom.
That's a really good point, because, of course, this is the first time that we've seen Connor relaxed, really, in the modern day sequences. Like, he's much more relaxed here than he was on his date with Brenda.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised at that, mind. that date, in inverted commas, with Brenda is, yeah.
Yeah. Well, the Castagir's I think we should have a party. Of course, in terms of what was actually filmed, they did have a party. There's a deleted scene involving Bedso, the cop played by John Polito, where they go to a club, and it's included in, it's referenced in A Kind of Magic, the making of the original Highlander, the book by John Melville, and he talks about it a bit in there. That the fact that there's a scene where Connor and Castagir go to a club and Bedso is spying on them. As far as I could tell, he's actually meant to be in a cut shot in the bushes in this scene. And he goes and spies on them in this club, and they basically get him pissed and get him up and dancing with a lampshade on his head with a go-go dancer.
You see, Rob, this is why this podcast is amazing. Because as a listener of this podcast, I just think that's absolutely fun. I've never heard that before. And I love Highlander and I try and consume it as much as humanly possible. But I've never heard that before, and that is just amazing.
Oh, there are some photos of it that I'll try and dig up of at least Connor and Castagir in the club. Which is very kind of Chat Noir, very, very Terminator, very, you know, like that very neo-noir cinematography.
Mm.
And, yeah, I mean, they definitely existed. They definitely shot it. They definitely cut it. And obviously we've complained in the past about the fact that the cop storyline in Highlander is very truncated. It doesn't really go anywhere, apart from the wonderful scene that we'll discuss in a couple of episodes' time involving the sassy newspaper vendor. But yeah, there were a few additional scenes that were cut that would have potentially developed that somewhat more. And the fact that those scenes were meant to be the ones that went into the next scene we'll be talking about, with the duel on Boston Common, but they cut those and then obviously recorded the voiceover in this scene, establishing that.
I think we should have a party.
Oh no! I remember the last time we had a party.
Really? When exactly was that?
It was 1783.
1783.
Yes.
It does definitely sounds like it's recorded afterwards.
Yeah, it does.
I'm incredibly sad that I'm never going to see that scene of them in the nightclub.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, it's a real... I'm really sad that we're never going to see the shot of Bedso in the bushes, kind of looking at them talking on the bridge, because you're thinking that would be quite an interesting... Just to see how that's framed, if it's like... If it's more like he's a surveillance cop, because it could just look comically creepy, like he's just voyeuristically spying on them, But apparently the scene in the club, which is called the dugout, I think it's described in the book that they, that Connor and Castigere do like a pincer movement on him, and they basically pounce on him, and then they force him to, yeah, to join them in this amazing night out they're having. And you're right, that would be quite... I'm not sure that it would fit the tone of the film, but yeah, it would be fascinating to see it and to see if you could slot it in without losing the momentum or if it's too much of a tonal shift or something.
Oh, please, if anyone listening has got access to that footage, I don't care how, please get in touch. I really need to see them getting him pissed with a lampshade on his head. It's everything that's been missing from my life, ever. I'll go so far as to say that.
There was there's a couple other things in the book because both Rob and I have been reading it recently, but Hugh Quarty says that Christopher Lambert was a good guy and was nice enough to compliment him on his very, very basic French. And he said that Clancy Brown was also easygoing and was not starry, neither was Lambert. John Polito was a little serious, but not a diva, just to create the world of the film again for you.
Has Hugh Quarty spoken about Highlander quite a lot then? Have you seen anything more about his recollections of the film, or is that sort of in the book and that's really what the most of what he's spoken about it?
The most that I've seen is just in this book, because the author interviewed lots and lots of people involved with Highlander, got some great stuff from him. But yes, one of the things that Rob mentioned earlier about the... Was it the Connor says again, Rob? Maybe we should just bother with it or something?
When Connor says, do you think we should go on?
Do you think we should go on?
Yes, that's it. So Greg Wyden's original script was much more like that in terms of there wasn't really a prize to be won. It was just this... Because it was based on The Duelist, the Ridley Scott film, or it was inspired by The Duelist. That was one of the inspirations that Greg Wyden, who wrote the original script, had. So, and in that, it's about these two soldiers during the Napoleonic era who spend their whole lives just dueling each other to the point where they kind of forget why they're doing it. And in this, there was the idea that for being immortal, there's not really a prize, you just keep doing it. And it actually becomes this thing that you just do because there's nothing else to do. And it sounds much more downbeat than in the film, where it's like everyone is working towards something. This is to try and stave off the inertia of living forever.
That's quite poetic, and yeah, it's lovely. Sort of. In its own special way.
Yes, it's. I think that Peter Bellwood and Larry Ferguson, who were the Hollywood scriptwriters that were brought in to completely rewrite, well, to do like a big rewrite on it, thought, no, this needs a bit more drive to it, to be honest. So it turned it from something that was quite introspective into a film that I think, to be honest, a lot more people... like in this incarnation.
Yeah, because it gives it more drive and there is an end point to it.
Yeah.
But it is interesting that like, you know, shall we go on could be read in so many different ways. Shall we just keep going? Shall we go on across this bridge?
Yeah.
Or shall we go on and have a fight and see whose head remains on their shoulders? It can be read in so many different ways. I've never quite known where I was with it. It's always had that ambivalence to it, that line. So it's really interesting to hear that.
Yeah. And also, what's the name of the bridge again, Elaine?
Bow Bridge. B-O-W.
Do you think that Bow Bridges was kind of invited to be in the film just to walk across Bow Bridge?
Yeah, we were just talking about that before we came on, weren't we? Mark made that joke to me as well. So,
sorry.
We're all there tonight.
We couldn't find one called Jeff, so they had to settle for Bo.
That's right. And to your point, Elaine, about there would definitely be a spin-off of all these characters if this was made now. You would have the Highlander side stories, and there would definitely be a Castigere movie that kind of shows him through the ages as well.
Yeah, I would hope so. And Fazil as well, like you only get to meet the other immortals, apart from the Kurgan. You only get to meet these other immortals that are shown for such a short period of time, and it's such a fascinating idea, this idea of, you know, living forever until you have a you have an argument with another one, that you'd love to see the different pathways that they took. And you can see that in the costuming. Faziel and his funny flippy whippies around the car park. And then you've got Castigare with his robes and his charm, you know, that I love him. You could probably tell this from everything I'm saying. I think he is such a character in all the senses of the word. And then you've got Connor with the sad eyes and his trench coat.
Well, that's the thing, because Castigare initially seems like he's stoic. And this is probably the most light-hearted that we see Connor when he doesn't really have an agenda. He's just there catching up with an old friend, and Castigare's there looking, you know, slightly solemn. And you get the impression that these are two people who have a history together, who might not be the closest friends. Again, they haven't seen each other for a century, but they are two people who do have an appreciation of each other. And Rob, I know that Hugh Quashie, as we spoke about earlier, is the lead in the 1989 film The Church, or La Chiesa.
Yeah, so The Church is I'm a big fan of Italian horror films, and The Church is produced by Dario Argento, directed by Michele Soavi. Hugh Quashie plays Father Gus, who is the main character and basically has to stop this demon from being raised in the bowels of this church. And it's one of those that it is a late 80s Italian horror film, which means that it's very overblown and very, very silly, but I think it's a really good watch. So if you like your Italian horror, then you should check out The Church. And Hugh Quashie, I mean, no one's really called to do really intricate acting in these movies, but they just have to have some presence. And yes, he certainly brings that. But he is one of those great actors where you kind of think, well, you should have been in bigger things, even though he's had a really, really busy career. But he's done stuff like, you know, Press Gang and Medics and Doctor Who, and then he's in The Church and he's in Highlander and Star Wars. And it's like, wow, that is a varied but consistently busy career that he's had.
He was in an episode of Red Dwarf, which I had to watch twice, because he just plays the voice of a computer.
Property, core space removing, and equipment, core space damaging. Ships, core space of series of looting with charged formally, are you?
Now, I don't know if he was just around set that day, but this was 1993, so he'd been in Highlander, he'd been in films, but it seemed like a really weirdly small part for him, just as two lines as the voice of a computer.
Yeah, it's either that or he just never turns down work, and it's...
Well, fair play.
Weird when you sometimes hear these actors who you think are pretty well established, who are in these things, and they kind of say, well, I never know when I'm going to be offered something else, so you never turn anything down. But you're Hugh Quashie.
I'm so excited for the mention of Press Gang.
That was just for you, Mark. So is there anything else to say about this scene? Could we share any picture with you two on the bridge?
Oh, we have so many pictures. We will send you. I'm going to say a good one, but it's probably one where we're really sweaty, because it was very hot that day.
I went to New York imagining that it was obviously September. I thought it'll just be like September is in the UK. It is the hottest I have ever been. It's just so humid, and you go into the subway and it gets even hotter, and yeah. So yeah. On all the pictures we look at, you look beautiful at any time,
honey.
I look like a sweaty mess. So just bear that in mind before anyone sees these pictures. But yeah.
Yeah, we're not dressed for summer. We came dressed for September, and then we wandered around Central Park for hours with me dragging Mark to a bridge. I think I have to say, if anyone has the opportunity to go to Central Park in New York and has the chance to go to the bridge, I'd really, really recommend it. Like I say, you can do all sorts of film things there. You can have a look at the Ghostbusters building. You can see there's just absolutely loads. I think there's like a Trump Tower in the distance. You know, we don't talk about that, but you know, there's all sorts that you can see from that point. So it doesn't just have to be a Highlander trip. It can cover a multitude of things. But it is a really beautiful place and a very relaxing, calming part of the park. So if you do get the opportunity to go, we really, really recommend it.
Brilliant.
Excellent. Okay. Is there anything else to talk about with this episode?
Not from us.
Not from us.
And I think I'm good.
In which case, Elaine and Mark, thank you for coming on. Where can our listeners find you online?
You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at The Honeymoon Pod, and you can find all our episodes on anywhere you get podcasts, including where you listen to this, or at thehoneymoonperiod.com.
Yes, well done, love.
That was very concise.
First time.
And how about you, Mr. Daniel?
If you want to find my writing, you can find that at filmstories.co.uk, at lovehorror.co.uk, at electric-shadows.com. And if you want to listen to Rob and I talk about film more generally, then you can do that at the Movie Robcast, which you can listen to wherever you're listening to this. And you can follow that at Movie Robcast on Twitter.
Excellent. And yeah, if you want to follow me online, you can do so on Twitter at Robert M. Wallace. You can also find my writing of all the film sites, www.ofallthefilmsites.com. If you want to follow this podcast, the one you're listening to right now, it's on Twitter at McLeodTime. You can also drop us an email if you've got any stories you'd like to share at whowantstopodforever@gmail.com. Well, all that's left to say is thank you very much, Mark and Elaine, and I'm delighted to say I believe you're joining us for the next episode.
We are. Exciting. Bring it on.
And thank you very much, Mr. Daniel.
Well, thank you as always.
And until next time, Mark and Elaine, would you take us out with Another Time McLeod?
Another Time McLeod!
Another Time McLeod!
Perfect.
That was quite a good one.
Yeah.
I quite enjoyed that.
Yeah.
That was very cathartic.
Awesome.